Life as a performing artist is full of major ups and downs. In fact, if you haven't experienced disappointment as an actor yet, then you just haven't been around long enough. If that feels discouraging, we get it. But understanding that truth can actually set you free. Today, we're talking about one mindset shift that can make all the difference.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Cortman Westfall, a Broadway music director, voice coach, and tenured professor in the musical theater department at the University of Michigan.
And I'm Chelsea Wilson, a performer turned voice teacher to Broadway stars and vocal coach on Broadway productions like The Phantom of the Opera, School of Rock, and more.
Here on the Broadway Vocal Coach podcast, you can expect real talk about the business, practical advice, and constant encouragement.
We believe there's space for every artist in this industry. All you need is the right support. So consider us your two-woman hype team. Welcome to the Broadway Vocal Coach podcast, where we help musical theater performers get unstuck and take the next step in their careers. Wow, Cynthia, it feels wild to be back here in our virtual podcasting studio. This is our first episode back since I've had my baby.
The big event.
Yeah, everything you've been listening to for the last like 2 months was pre-recorded before I went on maternity leave. So it's kind of wild to be back at it this month, like taking a step away from baby life 100% of the time and putting my brain towards other things, which actually feels kind of nice.
Okay, so for those listeners who listened to the Erin Dilly podcast, if you remember, Erin Dilly and I, we were in a little bit of a fight because Erin Dilly's belief was that when she went from one baby to two, that everything sort of just fell into beautiful synchronicity and everything just felt like it was tied up with a neat little bow. And I think she even said it got a little easier, I want to say. And I was like, agree to disagree. I found going one baby to two so much harder. It kicked my butt so much. So we now, you can be the deciding vote. Where do you fall on the spectrum here?
Well, okay, listen, I'm only like 2 months into having two children. So I feel like the vote is still out. Like we haven't totally gotten the final say, but I gotta say, Cynthia, I'm more with Erin than I am with you. I'm sorry to leave you in the lurch
here. I'm so glad. Like, but, why would I want you to have the harder experience?
You're right. I'm glad to be having the better experience. Going from zero to one is like life-altering. Your life will literally never be the same again. Like, the transition from zero to one is insane. Absolute wild. You can't wrap your head around it. So going from one to two, I was like, okay, I remember what having a newborn is like. I feel less stressed about it. You know, like as a first-time mom, I felt like my anxiety, like many other first-time moms and first-time parents in general, are the anxiety is high. You don't know what to expect. You're experiencing everything for the first time. You don't know what to worry about, what's maybe not such a big deal, if the sounds that they make all night long in their sleep are normal, or if you need to take them to the hospital. I mean, like you just wonder and worry all the time.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have that going for me this second time around. The thing that I will say is the hardest is having a toddler while having a newborn. Like the baby part, honestly, is easy. Like the baby's mostly happy. But like the toddler, who knows what's going on in that girl's head? Who knows? And you can't keep her happy. Nothing you do is enough. So that's the hard thing. Honestly, even this morning, I was like trying to do a morning routine with my toddler while having to nurse the baby, and the toddler doesn't want me to nurse the baby and wants mommy to hold her. I mean, it's a lot. That's the thing that's a lot right now. Okay. And I know you felt that too.
That's where I was at.
Yeah.
The baby was so hard. It was the combination and the toddler time.
It
was a lot. But it was also awesome. Lot.
Yeah. So we'll see. Let's keep checking back in. But so far, it's mostly great and the expected amount of difficult, I think.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
So Cynthia, something you said the other day, we were on an Instagram Live, sparked this thought that I just cannot stop thinking about what you said. And I was like, we've got to talk about this. We've got to talk about this on the podcast. I want to have a whole conversation with you about it because I think it is life-changing. if you really allow it to be. So we were on this Instagram Live and someone had a question about degree programs or, you know, what was really like the best path forward for their student, for their child. And you said something that just blew my mind. It's the difference between attachment and commitment. Tell us what you shared in that moment. Tell us what that is.
Yeah. So I am also really kind of obsessed with this concept of attachment versus commitment. And I got this idea from my life coach years ago, who I'm also very obsessed with. She's amazing. And the idea is that attachment is an outcome that you're attached to versus being committed to more of a way of being really, it ensures that regardless of the result of your endeavors or your journey, you will persist, you will continue to create the future that you're committed to based on all the wisdom that you gather along the way versus being attached to like one specific thing that if you get it or don't get it is going to determine quote unquote success or failure. Whereas it's not about success and failure anymore when you're committed to something because there's lots of paths to reach the thing that you're committed to or that way of being that you're committed to. It might look differently than what you were initially attached to, but it's just a really simple mindset shift. I'll tell you the example that she gave me, which this was an example she gave me that was different than what I was dealing with at the time. So don't anybody get worried about my marriage. It's just fine. I love my husband.
I love you, Kirk.
But she talked about like being attached to a relationship that year. And let's say you're in a relationship and you know, and everybody in your world knows it's not a great relationship for you. It's never going to be a great relationship for you. But you have this idea that you want to be in a great marriage. And this is the relationship you are in, and it's the one you are attached to, and you are attached to trying to make that work. And it might be that actually that's not the person you're supposed to marry, because if you're committed to a happy, healthy, vibrant marriage, perhaps this one in the relationship that you're really attached to isn't going to get you the goal of happy, healthy, vibrant marriage. So maybe you actually have to let go of that attachment in order to let in some other pathways to what the ultimate commitment is, which is happy, healthy, vibrant marriage. So I think the example I used in the webinar or the Instagram Live was in terms of students who are auditioning for college programs, that sometimes they'll get really attached to the idea of a specific program at a specific school. Like, I need to go to this top 10 school with a BFA program. I'm attached to that idea versus I am committed to a creative life in musical theater. Then you have tons of paths open to you. If that's your commitment to getting great training so that you can have a career, a creative life in musical theater, then it might be a BA program. It might be a BM program. It might be an acting program. It might be even something completely different and you're taking dance lessons and voice lessons on the side.
The reason why I love this when you said this on Instagram Live, I had never quite thought of it in this way. And like the freedom that it opened up for me in my mind and the freedom that I think it can open up for performing artists as well is so huge because it's that attachment that leads to disappointment. It's attachment to a specific lane or a specific outcome that is where disappointment is rooted in. Right?
Yeah.
As opposed to commitment to the long-term goal or like the big umbrella feeling or, you know, large-scale outcome that you're talking about, that when you realize, okay, well, this rejection stings, or the fact I didn't get into this program or I didn't book this job or this relationship didn't work out, that's just all on the way and part of the larger goal that you have. And then you can start that mindset shift then allows you to see all of those bumps in the road as just like part of the road as opposed to the stopping point or the end of the journey. Because, wow, if we all stopped at every time there was a bump in the road, we'd be stuck 100 miles ago, you know?
Yeah.
Like we have to keep going. Yeah, that just feels so powerful for me. I feel like there's so many times in my life looking back now with this framework where I see this true for me in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I'll get us started with one, and then I know that you have thoughts on this too, Chelsea. When I moved to New York City, I think part of what allowed me to be successful was I was fully classically trained, only classically trained, had never seen a Broadway show, had never really done any musical theater. I'd done a tiny bit. I'd played in a couple of pits in grad school, but that's not music directing. That's not teaching vocals. It's not, you know, it was just, I was being used as, mm-hmm. as someone who could play the piano. So I really felt like I had no real musical theater experience when I got to New York. But that's not why I moved to New York. I moved to New York and I wrote this in my journal at the time. I still have it. It says, I just want to be a working musician. I just want to make a living making music. And that was a really broad umbrella. So when I got to New York City, thinking I would work somehow classically, and I thought at the time it would probably be in the world of opera coaching, was what that would look like. My first night in New York City, I happened to see my first Broadway show. And there was a woman conducting that show, and I'd never seen a woman conduct like that before. So I had no idea that was a thing. I had no idea what Broadway shows were, so that was brand new. And I think the fact that I had said to myself, I just want to make a living, you know, making music, I just want to be a working musician, allowed me to pivot really quickly and be like, okay, even though I have all this training classically, that's a really cool path. And so I started getting training that I needed to, you know, go down the path of musical theater. And I think if I'd moved to New York with the idea that I'm going to be an opera coach, then I don't think I would have even considered that Broadway. That would have been like, well, that's not my style of music. I'm a piano player, not a conductor. I just don't think I ever would have even explored that if I'd been really attached to this idea of opera coach. And so, you know, that started this big chain reaction of musical theater. And then I did start getting attached. I got attached to New York City and I got attached to Broadway. And I would be lying if I said I didn't, because I did. I turned down so many national tours.
Same.
Because I was like, no, I only work in New York City and I only do Broadway. And I will not go out on that national tour because I only do Broadway. And then when the teaching job at University of Michigan came up, I really kind of fought that in a way, like I didn't have gratitude for it in a way that I wish I had, because I felt almost like I was so attached to New York and Broadway that even taking this incredible teaching job almost felt like a weird failure. And moving to Michigan felt like such a weird failure. It took so long for me to figure out that, my commitment was make a living doing music. I'm still making a living doing music. And I have the ability to do even more. Like what the teaching job allowed me to do was have stability when my children came, have stability when the pandemic hit. I mean, it's given me so many gifts along the way, but like I didn't see it at first. I really didn't see it in the very beginning. It felt, and I know you have thoughts on the New York City and the job pivots and all of that. So do share.
Yeah. Oh, I do. Wow. Moving to the Midwest after New York City is the biggest surprise I've ever had in my life. I'll tell you that. Like, I'm so glad you mentioned the New York City thing, because I have so many stories about this, but there's two in particular where I was really attached to my life looking a certain way. And living in New York City was one of them. So I moved to New York in 2012, right after I graduated from school. And I was like, I'm a lifer. I'm here forever. This is my city. This is my life. I was really attached to the identity of being a New Yorker, like being a person who chose to live this big life in New York. Isn't that so funny?
Yeah.
But like, so many people.
I had it too.
This is so many of us.
I still have it a little bit.
Yeah, this is so many of us. We do. We do. Spoiler alert, I do not live in New York City right now and haven't for quite some years. Yeah, I was super attached to it. But interestingly enough, in 2019 into 2020, I was single and I was dating. I'd gotten out of a long-term relationship. Back to that, are you committed to a vibrant, lovely, happy relationship? Or are you committed to, you know, this person or this choice, right? So that resonates with me too. But anyways, I was single in New York. I was nearly 30. And at the time, I was like, nothing and no one will take me outside of New York. Like, I don't care if I meet some person who, like, I don't know, lives somewhere else. Like, no, 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 no. My life is here. Nothing will take me away from my life here. You know, my career was going great. I had so many wonderful clients in the city. I was working on Broadway shows, all these things. Like, New York was my identity. And I'd really fought to stay there. This is like 8 years now, right? And then, surprise, surprise, I meet who would become my future husband on an airplane. And he didn't live in New York. He lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And surprise, surprise, my life was never the same. And so 2020 hits, and in March, it's March as we're recording this. It was literally 4 years ago. I drove out of New York City on March 13th. I packed a bag full of winter clothes and drove to Milwaukee to be with my then boyfriend for, like, I was like a week or two while this whole COVID thing blows over. Long story short, we ended up in Utah, again, thinking we'd be in Utah for a week to, like, visit our families. No, 7 weeks later, we got married in my parents' backyard, and then we were faced with, like, okay, well, what's next? Like, where are we going to live? What are we going to do? And the plan was that he would move to New York. Like, that was really what we were hoping for, is what he wanted, it's what I wanted, but it didn't make any sense. He was not going to find any work in New York City, but he had a great job in Milwaukee that did continue throughout the pandemic. And so I was faced with this reality of, like, everything I'm doing is online. I have to leave New York. I'm leaving New York for a time, for forever. I didn't know, but I gave up my apartment in June of that year. I went back to the city in June to move out of my apartment. It was the first time I was back in my apartment since March. So it was like, wow, 3 months? And the first time I was back was to move out, like, leave the city that I loved so much, leave this life that I was so attached to living, and move to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which, by the way, is a super cool city. Like, really enjoyed my time there, even during the pandemic. But, like, Wisconsin, I truly never thought I would say that word so many times in my life, but I then lived there. Like, I truly can't believe it. And it was really hard for me. Honestly, Cynthia, like, the next year was an identity crisis for me. Like, what am I doing here? Like, it didn't help that I was in a new city during the pandemic. So I wasn't, like, meeting people or making friends. I'd left all my friends behind. We were all scattered across the country at that point. Like, it was so challenging. And then we ended up moving to Washington for my husband's residency program. And then we chose to move to North Carolina, which is where I live now. And I feel very much like that was an active choice that we both made. But it's been 4 years now of disentangling my attachment to a big, beautiful life that I thought could only happen in New York City, to realizing, oh, the big, beautiful life that I'm committed to can actually be wherever I want. And I get to create that. I am a creator in what that looks like. And I can let go of that attachment to it only looking one certain way. But it has been hard. It has been really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. New York was such a big one. I think I'm still trying to disentangle that attachment a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when they message me for lessons, you know, I'm still teaching virtually online for the most part. They're like, you're in New York, right? Can we have a lesson when I come to New York next week? And I'm like, nope, I'm not. Sorry, haven't been for a while. it's still like my persona, but I'm not there.
Yeah. And I love this idea for performers and musicians and creatives of all types, because when you're attached, you know, like I got very attached to the idea of Broadway for a little while. If I had stayed too attached to that, I'm not sure I would have married who I married. I don't think I would have had kids. In fact, I am sure I wouldn't have, because I even told my husband when we were dating I would not be having any kids. And thankfully, he told me it was a deal breaker and I had to think on that a little harder. And, you know, there's a lot of things that would not have happened in my life had I stayed super attached to New York and Broadway, and only New York and Broadway. But I love this for creatives and performers as well, because the difference between, you know, I am attached to the idea of performing on Broadway might prevent you from having a really vibrant creative life as a performer in many other ways. I mean, there are incredible theaters and pockets of really vibrant artistry all around the country. And we've got clients who are in some of those pockets and performing all the time and working all the time, but not necessarily on Broadway. And when you stay attached to that idea, then it feels like a failure. Well, I didn't make it to Broadway. And it doesn't allow you then to enjoy all of the incredible work that you are doing wherever you are. In a, you know, might just look a little different or be in a different capacity. And yeah, I just, the older I get, the more I realize there were things I didn't appreciate in the moment because I was just too attached to my initial plan. And when plan A didn't work out, I was so disappointed in that, that I couldn't see that plan B actually was pretty incredible for a lot of other reasons.
Yeah. How do you think performing artists can implement this idea, this mindset shift in their daily lives, in their performing lives?
So on a small scale, I think one mind shift change that performers can make is when it comes to auditions, and we've heard this before, but maybe this is just another way of thinking about it, is if you're really attached to an outcome in your audition, then every time you step in that audition room and you don't book the job, that's going to feel like a failure. It's going to feel like a rejection. But if your commitment is that every time you have an opportunity to perform, whether it's in an audition room or a concert or a show, you are going to take it 100%, then auditions can actually become a really cool outlet to share your artistry that day, because what you're committed to is sharing your artistry as opposed to attached to the outcome of what that audition is going to bring you. So that's kind of on a small scale.
Yeah.
And on the larger scale, I think it's, you know, what I just mentioned, which is if you're, you know, like my initial commitment of being a working musician, like if what you really want to do is be a performer, I really want to be a singer. I want that to be part of my identity. I want to be a singer, be a musical theater performer, then that can happen in a million different ways. It doesn't have to only happen in New York City on a Broadway stage. You know, that becomes an attachment. But if you're open to the idea of being committed to being a singer, that could be a singer in your church. It could be a singer for benefit concerts at local, you know, nursing homes or schools. It could be teaching music in your kids' preschool. It could be performing in your local theater. It could, you know, it could just mean so many different things.
Yeah. I think about people who just want to live a creative life. I want to be a singer. I want to be a performer. Well, a performer is someone who performs. It doesn't matter where. A singer is someone who sings. And I think sometimes we cut ourselves off from the joy of what we love to do because just singing in our room, learning a new song for the sake of flexing those muscles and being creative and doing a character analysis on a new piece, like that can actually be an extraordinarily fulfilling work to do alone, you know, as opposed to, well, I don't have any auditions coming up. Why would I sing today? Why would I practice? Yeah. Why would I vocalize? Why would I warm up? Why would I learn a new song? I don't have to learn a new song. And that's fine. We all go through times when we're like, I need a break. I need a break from this. That's fine. But when the shift becomes, I'm committed to living a creative life. I'm committed to being a singer sings. Sing wherever. I think about this for myself too. Like I haven't been teaching these past few months. I haven't been using my voice hardly at all. And like, that's what I want to get back into is just like, that's still part of my identity. Like, even though I teach, even though I'm a coach, even though I do this podcast and I make stuff online, whatever, like, I'm still a singer. And that can happen around the piano at my house. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be this big thing for me to tap into what energizes me and what is a part of my identity, what is tapping into my inherent artistry and unique voice. Like, that can just happen.
Yeah. And for performers, when it comes to auditions, one thing I will often tell the college students that I teach is when you finish college, auditions might be the only outlet you have for a little while that you get to perform. So take it. Take that opportunity to perform. Oh my gosh, I have 3 performance opportunities today, or 3, one of my colleagues calls them performance appointments. I have three performance appointments today. Instead of three auditions, I have three performance appointments. You know, even doing self-tapes in your bedroom, that is a performance opportunity. That is a chance that you get to sing and share your artistry, even though I know it sometimes feels like it goes into the black hole and some kind of void. It's still an opportunity, and any chance we have to shift this mindset to look at this as a part of a greater commitment, I think is always a win, really.
Yeah. The other thing I would advise folks to do is to write down a handful of these commitments and allow yourself to then put all sorts of roads or paths under those commitment umbrellas, right? Like if I'm committed to having a career in musical theater, well, how many different ways could that look? Or if I'm committed to being a singer, how many different ways can I manifest that, make that happen in my life? If I'm committed to having a beautiful, healthy, loving, romantic relationship, okay, well, then I don't have to narrow down my choices by height and hair color. You know, like you can really just begin to imagine the kinds of people or the kinds of places you might find that relationship, you know, or how you could manifest that in your life. I think this can be true in so many areas of our life. And this is maybe a different way to think about goal setting too, right? Oftentimes we get disappointed when we look back on our goals because we didn't accomplish the very specific thing that we said. But again, this greater idea of what are your big commitments and then how are you going to work towards making those happen? That feels really motivating to me, especially in a profession that can feel chock full of disappointments all along the way.
Yeah, let me end with this quote that I have. The world does not always show up with the results we might want. And if you are attached to the outcome, you might see in your effort a failure when in fact it contains the seeds of success. And I love that.
I like that a lot. Who said that?
I don't even know. I keep random quotes and I don't always know who they're attributed to. So my apologies to whoever said this. So stay committed, folks. Stay committed.
Yeah. Thanks, Cynthia. I love this. Thanks for this conversation today.
Yeah. And welcome back. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Podcast
world. See you again soon. If you enjoyed today's episode, take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at BeWay Vocal Coach. Share this episode with a friend and please consider leaving us a review. And if you're ready to take your next step but aren't entirely sure what that should be, take our quiz. We'll strategize with you to outline a roadmap to your unique goals. Visit BeWayVocalCoach.com/take the quiz. We can't wait to hear your story and help you take the next step in your career.